Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to continue to present the analysis that Yanoa provided regarding the most infamous man in human history, the most influential man in human history. Now, when I say influential, that has a connotation of positive, and it ought not. You can influence for good or for bad. Hasatan, the adversary, influences. Barack Hussein Obama is a very evil man. He has a tremendous influence. He made a mess of the world. You can have influence and be evil. Adolf Hitler had a lot of influence. He was evil. Hadrian, the Roman emperor, had tremendous influence. He was evil incarnate. And so, if you were to look at human history, clearly the most influential man in all of human history would be Shaul, who renamed himself Paul. And I say that because he is author of half of the Christian New Testament. Christians base their religion on him. There is absolutely no correlation between Christianity and Yahusha. They don't know his name. They don't recognize that he was Torah observant. And they ignore most everything that he said and did. So Christianity is based almost entirely on Paul's letters. And since Christianity is the most popular religion in human history, no one has influenced humankind more than Paul. Unfortunately for Christians, Paul was a liar. He was a false prophet. He was not inspired by God, but by his own admission was demon-possessed. By his own admission, he was insane. By his own confession, he was ruthless and he was perverted. Paul is a complete and utter fraud. Everything he had to say is deadly. Everything he wrote angers God. And yet his letters comprise half of the Christian New Testament. So we should not be surprised that God had a great deal to say about this man. He warned us about him. He diagnosed well in advance, 666 years in advance of the time that Paul would author his first letter, Yahweh called him out by name and renounced him, warned us about him. He even said, and the rock, this is Habakkuk, that's where we find this warning. After Yahweh made it possible for him to read Paul's letters, said, and the rock you have established to argue against and to rebuke him. It's brilliant. God only named one person a rock. All of human history, there's only one person God named a rock. Now, there are two rocks spoken of in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. This rock is the individual that Yahusha called the rock. Peter is from Petros. Petros is the Greek word for rock. Now, Yahusha spoke Hebrew and Aramaic, and it's the Aramaic word for rock that actually was used in this particular case with Shimon, Peter's actual name, and so he became Shimon Kethesh, the rock, Shimon. And it is that individual, if you look at the Yahusha's last recorded discussion with his disciples, what you find is that Yahusha is specifically equipping and warning and preparing the rock to deal with Paul, to rebuke Paul, to stand up to Paul. Now, there is one other rock in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. That's the rock of our salvation. It's the rock that was the cornerstone that was rejected by the religious and political establishment in Israel. It's Yahusha. And that rock is the cornerstone of Yahweh's temple, of the Torah itself. And so you could make the claim, and it would be, I think, equally valid, to say that the rock you have established to argue against and rebuke him, and to rather than look to Shimon Kephesh, Peter the rock, to look directly at Yahusha. And if you were to take that perspective, I think you would be even more accurate. Because what was Yahusha's first public declaration? Sermon on the Mount. And in the declaration or the instruction on the Mount, Yahusha devotes the majority of it, and you find it in Matanyah 5, 6, and 7. The majority of it is devoted to two things, both related. To a declaration of the enduring and beneficial nature of the Torah, saying that the Torah is the good and valuable gift that the Father has given to us. That the Torah is the narrow way that leads to life. And then to say that the Torah is enduring forever. Well, enduring so long as the heaven and earth exist. So if you can look out and you see the earth and the heavens, then every stroke of every letter that comprises every Hebrew word of every sentence in the Torah is still valid and intact. And the argument against Paul, because Paul claimed that when his Jesus came, that he did away with the Torah. Yahusha said, do not think that I came to do away with the Torah. It's a direct attack, it's a direct rebuke, a direct argument against Paul. So the rock of our salvation was established to argue against and to rebuke him. And he goes on, because it's not only the fact that Yahusha said, do not think that I came to annul the Torah, but instead to fulfill it. He goes on to say that there will be a wolf in sheep's clothing who will try to lure you away from the Torah. And he added to that this realization that from a rotten source, a rotten tree, you get rotten fruit. And then on top of that, he said to the victims of Pauline Christianity that they will refer to him as Lord, Lord, the term that Paul loved to use. And he says to those who call me Lord, Lord, none of you will, not one of you will be allowed into heaven. And then not listening to him, which is the nature of Christianity, because they listened to Paul instead, who wrote, but I say, and who never quoted Yahusha. And never accurately quoted Yahweh. They repeat the same line because they don't listen to him. They said, Lord, Lord, didn't we do these great things in your name? Didn't we cast out demons in your name? Didn't we perform mighty miracles and establish these wonderful things in your name? And he says, no, I don't know you. Get away from me, those of you who are without the Torah. You could not have a more systematic, a more irrefutable, a more comprehensive, a more direct, a more rational, a more informed, a more pertinent argument against Pauline Christianity than what Yahusha provided in his instruction on the Mount. So, and the rock you have established to argue against and rebuke him is Yahusha. And it's also the disciple Shimon Kephesh, whom Yahusha announced was the rock. God's very precise in his prophecies. You have positioned, appointed, and ordained to prove that he is wrong, to chide him, to accuse him, and to judge him. That's what the Sermon on the Mount does, is it chides Paul. It proves that Paul is wrong. It judges Paul. The wolf in sheep's clothing. The false prophet. The one who in heaven is called lowly and little, which is the very name that Paul chose for himself, choosing to be called Paulos, which in Latin means lowly and little. And then, in the most chiding, judgmental statement that Yosha ever made, and he says this to Christians, "I have come in my Father's name, and you have not received me. You have not accepted me. But another, he will come in his own name, and him you will receive." We only know of one person who changed their name, came in their own name, whose very writings caused many people to receive him and reject Yosha in the Father's name. And in the Father's name is so important because that's what Yosha means. Yahweh saves. By changing his name to Jesus Christ, they're rejecting him. By rejecting what he said in the Sermon on the Mount, they're rejecting him. By rejecting the fact that he was Torah observant, they're distancing themselves from him. They're not receiving him, but instead they're receiving the one who came in his own name, Paul. The one who laid out arguments as to why everything that Yosha said and did should be disassociated from the Torah, from Yahweh, from the very basis of Yosha, Yahweh saving. It is the rock, Yosha himself, the rock of our salvation, the cornerstone that was rejected, that was established to argue against and rebuke him, positioned and appointed and ordained to prove that Paul was wrong and to judge him. God warned us. He chided him. He proved that he was wrong. He judged him. He accused him. But you know, religious people don't much like listening to God. Now, they'll listen to the Roman Catholic Church and its popes. They'll listen to Paul. But listening to God, not so much. Even the children of Israel didn't much like listening to God. They even asked God when he was booming out to his Torah to them in first person. They said, it's kind of much for us. This goes on to say, too flawless and clean, our eyes to witness such malignant and displeasing evil. To look upon, to consider, and to evaluate such grievous and perverse labors. The travail of childbirth is painful and full of iniquity. You cannot endure it. When you know what God said in his Torah, when you come to know Yahweh as he presents himself in his Torah, when you come to know the benefits and the conditions of the covenant as delineated in the Torah, when you come to appreciate the invitations that Yahweh has provided for us to be called out of this world and to be adopted into his family and brought into his home that are manifest through the seven Moed Mikre, when you come to appreciate the brilliance of Yahweh and the prophetic proof that he provided, that he indeed exists, that his name is Yahweh, and that all of these things are reliable, and you put it all together and you recognize who God is, the role that he's playing, what he wants, what he's offering, you not only fall in love with him, but by contrast, you come to hate the malignant evil that is religion, that is corrupting this marvelous message, this wonderful offer from the Creator God of the universe. And that's exactly what Chabuk Habachuk is telling us. He's expressing the same thing that I feel in my gut when I have to deal with Pauline Christianity. It's repugnant. It's malignant. It's a horrible disease. It's a living incarnation of evil. Christmas, the Trinity, Sunday worship, the Holy Ghost, Jesus Christ, God dying, a bodily resurrection, Easter, a war against the Torah, against Yahweh's invitations to meet with Him. It's displeasing. It's evil. It's grievous. The very creation of Christianity is a perverse labor. Pain of childbirth is equated to it. Paul bore a family that thought that they were worshiping God when in fact they were worshiping the devil. That is who their Lord is. God says, Yahweh cannot endure it. It's one of the reasons this is said, that it opens with Yahweh continually withholding salvation because He can't endure it. He is not going to subject Himself to such ruthless lies. Can you imagine being the Creator God of the universe and creating all of this for our benefit so that we could engage in a loving relationship with Him, be part of His family, be adopted, enriched and empowered by Him, and to delineate the Torah for the express purpose of informing us, and then to have a pathetic piece of worm rot like Paul claim to speak for Him to annul all of it, to toss it all away, be disgusted. God cannot endure it. He's not only not going to save Christians, He can't even stomach the sight of them. Christianity isn't a means to God, it's a path away from Him. If you want to be completely ignored by God, become a Christian. If you want God's scorn, promote Christianity. We'll be back. Chabuk is having a discussion with Yahweh. Chabuk was brought forward in time. He was enabled by Yahweh to witness the influence of Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, the author of half of the New Testament. And now Chabuk is disgusted. Just as any informed and rational and moral person is when they consider the outright lies of Paul. And there is no question that Paul is a false apostle. It's not even up for debate. God is calling him such. Yahusha called him as such. And Yahweh is announcing to the world that he is a false prophet, a false witness, the plague of death. And when you look at what he did, you're repulsed. And so Chabuk is saying, and this is the conclusion of Chabuk 1:13. Why would you look at or consider treacherous betrayal that is neither trustworthy or reliable? You were silent and still, inactive, neither listening, speaking, or taking action in devouring the wicked more than the more righteous than him. So this gives us a number of insights into God. Chabuk, who is a prophet speaking on behalf of Yahweh, was inspired to ask a rhetorical question. God who is perfect, God who has created this marvelous and merciful and generous plan called the covenant, and who has established the means for us to engage in the covenant and to be saved by him, his children to be saved and enriched and empowered. And you have this man who claims to be speaking for God, coming in God's name, renouncing everything that God said and did. And so the prophet recognizes, why would you look at someone like that? Why would you even consider their treacherous betrayal? God's not going to look at him. God's not going to give him the time of day. He says, why would you consider such treacherous betrayal that is neither trustworthy nor reliable? Paul's letters, all 13 of them, and the religion formed based on them, Christianity, is being described here as treacherous betrayal that is neither trustworthy nor reliable. Wow. And then it goes on to say, you were silent and still, inactive, neither listening, speaking, nor taking action in devouring the wicked more righteous than him. You see, this Christian mythos that God engages in people's lives, that God must have wanted that to happen, it's God's will, is wrong. God does not engage in the lives of the wicked. He doesn't prompt them. He doesn't encourage them. He doesn't support them. But by the same token, he doesn't oppose them. He will tell you that you should reject their testimony. He will tell you to disassociate from them. He will tell you to expose and to renounce them. But you're not going to find God intervening in human affairs to stop the likes of Hadrian, Akiba, Caligula, Hitler, Stalin, Mao, Barack Obama, George Bush. He doesn't engage to stop them. He doesn't bother with them. Free will. Man has the opportunity to reject God. He has the opportunity to lead others astray. And God pays them no attention. He does not stop them. He does not engage in human events to prevent them from doing so. He did not stop Muhammad, even though Muhammad would create a religion that was universally opposed to his people. He did not stop Paul from writing his books. Yahweh does engage in people's lives, but only his children, or only those he knows will choose to become participants in the covenant. There are a very few number of exceptions where God has aided and abetted those that did not know him and who would never know him. And he would do so only because it was essential for communicating something important to Yisrael. But those events are few and far between. This is telling us that God does not engage in the lives of the religious. He did not engage in Paul's life. He did not appear to him. He did not teach him. He did not inspire him. He did not authorize him. It is saying that other than to tell us that we ought to avoid him, God has no association of any kind with Paul. Which means all of Paul's claims otherwise are disingenuous. Now, with that introduction, God reveals that he isn't about to alter any of the requirements to participate in his covenant, nor is he going to change the approach that he has taken to facilitate our salvation by way of his seven invitations. This alone is sufficient to put Paul, whose given name was Shaul, in direct opposition to Yahweh. Upon my requirements and responsibilities, my mission and functions, which serve as a safeguard to watch over and to preserve the observant from, say, derivative of shamar, to observe, closely examining, carefully considering, retaining my focus. I have decided I will literally and continually stand Ahmad. I will always be present, actually standing and thereby genuinely enabling others to consistently stand, sustaining and enduring. And I will always choose to stand and present myself, Yatsab. I will consistently stand firm, appearing and presenting myself upon that which protects and fortifies, Metzor, the defensive stronghold which safeguards, preventing a successful attack by the adversary. Yahweh is saying here that Paul was wrong, that this notion that God's original plan was being rejected, annulled, and replaced by the gospel of grace, and by that the Torah was being replaced by the New Testament, God is saying, nope, no. Upon my requirements and responsibilities, I have decided I will literally and continuously stand. There's a difference between the requirements and the responsibilities, although they are related. The requirements are five. You want to participate in the covenant. The requirements are, first, for you to walk away from Babylon, from religion, from your country, from politics, from patriotism. Second, for you to trust and rely on Yahweh. No one else. Trust and rely on Yahweh. Now that predisposes that you come to know who he is and understand what he's offering. Otherwise, you can't trust and rely. Number three, that you walk to him and become perfect. That goes into his responsibilities, which we'll speak to in a moment. There's a seven-step path where we walk to God. Only one. And he says, I want you to walk that path to him so that he can perfect us. Number four is to observe the terms and conditions of the covenant, the requirements of the covenant, if you will. To closely examine and carefully consider them, which is what we're doing right this very moment. And number five, parents are being asked to circumcise their sons so that they raise them to be part of Yahweh's covenant and so they are prepared to participate in Yahweh's family. Those are the five requirements. He says, I'm decided that I'm always going to uphold those. They're not changing. There is no new covenant. Only one covenant. And God's going to stand firm on its requirements. Now, responsibilities is a different thing, but related. Yahweh has a responsibility to honor his promises regarding the covenant. There are five benefits of the covenant. They are to perfect us, to make us immortal, to adopt us into his family, to enrich us, and to empower us. The five benefits of the covenant were provided by Yahweh honoring his promise to fulfill and enable Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah. He fulfilled his responsibility to become the literal enactment of those days, which are Yahweh's responsibility. Those are the first four mikre. Passover, which provides eternal life. Matzah, which perfects us. Bukurim, which causes us to be adopted into his family. And Shavuah, whereby we are enriched with his teaching, which comes from the Torah, and empowered by his Spirit. Those are the requirements. Those are the responsibilities. They endure forever. This puts Yahweh in absolute conflict with Christianity. And Yahweh just so happens to be the author of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, as well as the creator of the universe. The author of life. He says, I have decided I will literally stand upon my requirements and responsibilities, and I will choose to always stand and present myself upon that which protects and fortifies. What protects and fortifies? His word, his Torah, his testimony, his witness, his plan, the seven invitations to meet with him, the Moed Mikre, the covenant itself. This is forever, always in a day. And Yosha actually did these very things, which is Yahweh saving us. He goes on to say then, with that in mind, so then I will be on the lookout in order to see what he will say about me. But then how can I be expected to change my attitude, my thinking, or my response concerning my disapproving rebuke? The him here is the one individual that chose to undermine, to annul, to completely do away with Yahweh's responsibilities and his requirements, and to replace them with something as stupid as faith in the gospel of grace. So God is putting us on notice that he's going to continue to disapprove and rebuke him. So while Yahweh says, he tells us clearly that he's not going to engage stopping Paul, that he is not going to meet with Paul, negotiate with Paul, give Paul the time of day, he is still going to pay attention to what he has to say. Because it's important for God to convey this truth to us, that I cannot be expected to change my thinking or my response concerning my disapproving rebuke. God has judged him. He has condemned him. He rebukes him, and therefore he is disapproving and rebuking Christianity. That's God's response. You want to know what God's response is to the religion of Christianity? Disapproving rebuke. That's Chabaouk 2:1. So just as God announced that he would be on the lookout for the likes of Shaul, Paul, ever ready to disapprove and rebuke him or anyone suggesting that God has changed his plans or approach, so should we have been. Truly, we should have been. All of us. And specifically, Shaul, because no one else in all of human history fits this prophecy besides him. He not only tried to change God's requirements, specifically his stand on participation in the covenant, relationship and the path to salvation, replacing God's approach with his own, he claimed to speak for God while consistently contradicting and undermining him. There's no one else that has influenced a meaningful number of people who did this very thing. Folks, it's only Paul. And that is why Yahweh has introduced this prophecy in this way, by affirming that he isn't going to replace his specific requirements for participating in the covenant with something as nebulous as faith, especially in the pagan graces, nor shirk his own personal responsibilities, whereby he has promised to become the living embodiment of his approach to salvation through his participation in Passover, unyeasted bread, and first fruits, as well as seven Sabbaths. God has established himself as being forever disapproving of Christianity, based as it is on Paul's repudiation of the Torah. In connection, a connection worth noting, in what follows, is that Paul's preferred conduit of misinformation was letters, often large and distinct ones from his own hand. And not only has Paul admitted that he was running, he should have been, just as we should run away from him. This is Chabaouk, Habakkuk 2:2. Then Yahweh answered, approaching me, and he said, write this revelation. And then God expounded upon and reiterated it using letters upon writing tablets, so that by reciting this, he might run and go away. Yes, indeed. God's answer is always in writing. You want the answer to the question, was Paul a false prophet? It's provided for you in writing. You want answers to whether or not Yahweh is God's name? It is provided for you in writing. If you want an answer to the question, does God have a means to salvation? It is provided for you in writing. If you want to know how to participate in the covenant, it is provided for you in writing. If you would like to know how God created the universe, that answer is provided for you in writing. If you want to know God's position on Christianity, it is provided for you in writing. Yahweh chooses the written word because it is much more precise, because it is much more comprehensive, because it endures the test of time, because it does not change, because it can reach the widest number of people, and because with the written word you can use your eyes to closely examine and your mind to carefully consider what is written. Then Yahweh answered, approaching me, and he said, write, Katab, use the alphabet to inscribe this revelation, and then expound and reiterate it using letters upon writing tablets, so that by reciting this, he might run and go away. This is a condemnation of Paul, the author of half the Christian New Testament. And when you recite this, he goes away.